From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Next Saturday is when our connection will be made. Next Saturday, the first day of early voting. What is that? 9 days away. Until then, we're working to bring you conversations with as many candidates who are going to be appearing on your ballot, or most of your ballots, as possible. And our goal, always, is to bring the candidates together in a particular race, if we can do that. It doesn't always work out that way. Sometimes it does. Today, we're dividing the hour into two parts. First, you're going to hear from State Senator Jeremy Cooney, the current New York State Senator for District number 56. He is seeking another term. His opponent is retired Gates Police Chief Jim Van Brederode, who declined to appear on this program. And that, by the way, that is for, as far as I know, that's for this whole election cycle. So former Chief Van Brederode decided not to come on with Senator Cooney, decided not to come on his own. That is his choice. We have to respect that. Then you're going to hear from Jen Lunsford in our second half hour, assembly member for New York's 135th District. Her opponent, Kimberly DeRosa, did not respond to our invitations to appear on this program. So let's talk about the 56th Senate District. Welcome back to the program, Senator Jeremy Cooney. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Evan. Always good to be on.
We always start. I know that by now, you're seeking another term. People may know you, but it's good to reintroduce yourself. A little bit about your background, a little bit about why you are running, in this case, for re-election.
Yeah, glad to do that. And again, thanks for making space for us. Just to clarify for our listeners, the 56th Senate District includes the majority of the city of Rochester. Think about the west side from the 19th Ward all the way down to Charlotte, then the towns of Greece and Gates on the west side. And on the east side, we have Brighton and Henrietta. So a good chunk of Monroe County. I have been in office. This is my second time running for re-election. I was elected in 2020. We have two-year terms in the state Senate. I'm originally from Rochester and from this community, grew up here, went to the Rochester City School District, graduated, went on to college and law school. But then I realized, you know, Rochester really helped create who I am today. You know, I was raised by a single parent. I always tell folks, when you're raised by a single parent, you're raised by the community. It was my Boy Scout troop. It was my local library. It was my local church community. All of those groups made such an impact on my life, helped me get to where I am today. And so I've been motivated throughout my career, which has been in public service about just 20 years now. It's hard to believe I started working down in Washington, D.C. for the late Congresswoman Louise Slaughter 20 years ago. But I've dedicated my career to making sure that young people have the same opportunities I was given, if not more, to really help build community here in Rochester and to make sure everyone has the opportunity to be successful. So delighted to be seeking re-election. I've been recently named the chair of transportation, and hopefully we can talk a little bit about that later on. But there's some real opportunities for growth in Monroe County, in the greater Rochester region. And I think having a voice who's from this community, who knows this community, and who loves this community is critical to ensuring our future success.
Just a bio note here. Are you the only Rochester City School District, public Rochester school graduate in the state Senate ever?
Not ever, but at least, and we did our homework on this, about 42 years it's been since we've had a Rochester City School District graduate serve in the Senate. So I'm the only one currently. I always like to say where it's always an opportunity to get more, because we want to make sure that with public service opportunities that young people, whether they're in the city of Rochester or whether in one of our surrounding towns, that they see themselves in public office. So I'm very proud to be an RCSD graduate. I recognize the challenges that we have, but I know in my heart that with our teachers and our students and our passion for education, we can turn that system around and make it something that we can be proud of again.
What is I don't actually love this question. We ask it sometimes this way. Maybe I should do a better job as an interviewer, but I'm just going to ask, what is priority one, or what is top of mind for you as you seek another term, as you look forward? What makes you say, boy, we have to keep working on X? What is it?
So I think in Rochester, it's about thinking bigger. Oftentimes, we are maintaining and just kind of chugging along and trying to fix some holes along the way. I think it's about dreaming about what we want to be as a community. Someone who grew up here, obviously, we've seen the changes in our business community. But it's beyond talking about Kodak and Xerox and Bausch & Lomb. We're bigger than that, right? It's talking about how are we going to create an environment that's going to attract and retain people. We are fortunate to have so many wonderful colleges and universities in this town. But how do we attract and keep those people to stay here? Well, we do that by having great job opportunities for our recent graduates. We do that by having housing stock so that people can live and start a family here. We do that by having great public school systems, again, whether in the city or in our suburbs, so that students can learn and figure out what their passion is. And we do that by taking care of our aging population. And we have a large aging population here in Rochester. How do we let people stay in their communities, stay in their homes, live lives of dignity? So it's really looking at the whole spectrum. By investing in kids, by investing in our seniors, we can create Rochester as a destination point. And I often say this in terms of New York State as a whole, but you know, in a time when we're thinking about hurricanes and all these terrible natural disasters happening in other parts of our country and the world, Rochester can be a place of climate stability. And so while we like to gripe about the weather, and I know it's a cold day today, you know, we still are at a great place to give people access to the outdoors, access to clean drinking water, things that we take for granted in this community that can make us a destination point for growth again.
Let's talk public safety before we get to transportation. I know as chair of transportation, this is big for you, and you've been on the program recently talking about a number of those issues. The reason I want to talk public safety out of the gate is because this is, we're not going to have the chance to talk to your opponent on this program. Again, that's his choice. The two candidates do have websites in the Senate race here that we're talking about. So listeners can go to jeremycooney.com. You can go to jimvanbrederode.com. And, you know, so I was spending some time on your opponent's website and seeing some of the media releases. There's someone that most reporters, journalists in Rochester know pretty well. That's Mark O'Donnell. He was for a long time. He was a public information officer for the New York State Police, and he's retired now. But he's appearing in a video supporting Jim Van Brederode and says that bail reform has, you know, been sort of a mess and caused some real problems and some headaches, both for law enforcement, for the public. And your opponent is a former police chief who says that it is too complicated, that judges don't know even some of the updates, that training hasn't been enough, that we can't have a system where judges don't even know the laws. We should go all the way back to the beginning and really admit it, that it was a mistake here. Where are you on bail reform? Because I know that for your opponent in this race, that is one of the big issues here.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I think when I'm knocking on doors and talking to voters, we're talking about public safety a lot. And I'm here to say that and remind your listeners that while I was not in Albany when the bail reform legislation was voted on, I have been in Albany and have voted for what we call tweaks or changes to the legislation to make it work better based on the response of local communities. And so let me give you a great example of that. One of the things that we heard from local law enforcement, we heard it from Monroe County Sheriff, we heard it from various PBAs, is that when someone was apprehended and went through the criminal justice system, the judges felt that they didn't have enough discretion. They didn't have enough ability to make a decision to hold somebody on bail, or if we're talking about parole reform or other things, didn't have enough opportunity to be able to reincarcerate someone if they pose a danger to the community. These are things that we have directly worked on, I voted for, and have supported in terms of changing the bail reform legislation and other pieces of criminal justice reform work. That doesn't take away from the original purpose of that legislation, though, which was to make sure that the size of someone's wallet didn't determine the criminal justice outcome that they were going to experience. And I think that nuanced approach, that balanced approach, which I bring to this race, is something that people like. I mean, that's certainly why the New York State Troopers PBA, the Police Conference of New York, the PBA of New York State, all of these law enforcement groups have endorsed my reelection to the state Senate because they see myself as a common sense candidate who listens to a local law enforcement partner, who understands the complexity of public safety and is committed to making sure that you have a safe neighborhood, whether you're in a suburban town or whether you're in the inner city.
Do you think your opponent's analysis of bail reform is just not correct?
I think it's surface level. I think he is playing to, you know, that divisive line of the sky is falling and everything is falling apart. And while we have our challenges, and I'm not putting my head in the sand here, I have been the first and open over the course of the last 4 years to talk to our friends in media, to talk to people about these issues and the challenges within it. But I think it's not enough to just yell and tell you about the problem on Facebook. You got to talk about what the solutions are. You got to be thoughtful when it comes to public policy, and you have to be at the table of decision making to be able to enact the change that you want to make. I think my approach with public safety is this, and I hope that your listeners can understand kind of my mindset around when it comes to criminal justice reform. It's about the three P's. It's about having prevention, right? Investing in those organizations and perhaps organizations that are new to our community that are working with young people in our schools, that are going into hospitals, that are dealing with gang intervention to prevent the crime from even getting to the point of gun violence or something terrible like we're seeing. But it's also about having policies which are clear so that judges and local legislatures and mayors and town supervisors, they know what the law is in New York State. We have to be clear about what we're trying to accomplish. But it's also about the third P, which is punishment. And a lot of people get squeamish around talking about punishment. And I don't. There have to be consequences for your action. And you know, a lot of folks in the political world that we're in like to say, oh, Democrats don't care about consequences. That's baloney. That's just not true. But we have to send a message on the streets of Rochester that whether you're stealing a car, whether you're robbing a store, or whether you're doing something more violent to another individual, that's unacceptable. I always like to say that I'm strong on justice, tough on criminals. Right, I believe in the power of a robust and fair criminal justice system. But if you have violated the trust of our community, if you have caused harm to another, if you created a victim, then you have to face the consequences for your actions, whether that's incarceration or something else. So it's about finding that balance. And I think, look, we got serious problems in our community that requires serious candidates for public office to be able to come up with solutions.
One other note on public safety. Your opponent says on Raise the Age, he writes, since its passing in 2017, youth crime has surged in Rochester with frequent carjackings, theft, and shootings. Jim Van Brederode wants to repeal the Raise the Age law and restore a system of, in his words, more consequences to those who break the law.
Well, if locking up every child and throwing away the key is his solution to the answer, I will bring him back in time when we did that before and it didn't work. In fact, New York State was the outlier in terms of being one of the few states in the nation. I think it was only one or two states that still prosecuted children. And we're talking about 16 and 17-year-olds as adults. Now, again, this is another example where I was not in the state Senate when the Raise the Age legislation was passed. In fact, the Democrats weren't even in the majority when that legislation passed. And so, but what I have supported is programs like the JEDS program. I know you've talked about that on this show before, that are working, that are using the Monroe County Probation Office to, you know, interact with these young people and their families to break the cycle of recidivism. So they're not just in and out of the criminal justice system for the next 30 years of their life. At the same time, let me tell your listeners this, because this is something that our friends on the other side of the aisle often omit when talking about Raise the Age. If you are a 16 or 17-year-old in the state of New York and you create a violent crime, you murder someone, you're charged with a rape, right? You will go into adult court. You will not go into the family court. You will have the opportunity to be tried as an adult based on a set of circumstances. And there is a consequence for that action. Despite Raise the Age for those violent level offenses. So, you know, it's this. When you're talking about public safety, you have to talk in specifics. There's not these broad strokes where every young person now, 16, 17-year-old, just gets to walk away with an appearance ticket. That's not the case. Are there rooms for improvement? Absolutely. But we need leaders who are serious and thoughtful to be able to listen, get that response from our judges, from our community members, from our local law enforcement officers, and go back in Albany to make sure that they're making those changes.
I want to talk taxes. I want to talk transportation. And on the subject of taxes, Jack is on the phone, a listener with a comment on taxes. Go ahead, Jack. Is Jack there? Go ahead, Jack.
I appreciate you showing up to share your thoughts, Senator. Thank you. And I am a registered Democrat, but I want to make a point on taxes. We've been homeowners in the town of Greece for over 45 years. And we're retired at this point, and my income's not going up, but my taxes certainly are. And the way that we pay for our property taxes here in the town of Greece, I want to stay in my home, but my taxes are ridiculously high. And compared to other states in the country, there's no denial that we're on the high end of the spectrum. And we're losing population in New York State. Now, I know you mentioned a number of positives, and I agree with every one of those, except for the fact that we're, one of the reasons that I think we're not attracting people is the taxes. And in addition to that, I would just make a comment on public safety. I shop at Home Depot for a amount of time, and I see what they've done to prevent people from walking out with stuff. There's a lot of discussion around the reality of the level of crime, but the fact that companies like Home Depot have to try and prevent people from being able to walk out of the door with wires and whatever else, and the store owners tell me they can't stop these people. So there's something going on that's making it difficult to hold repeat offenders accountable, including very young teenage boys that are, you know, there's no denial that, Evan, you've had people on your show that they talk about the fact that they find evidence of these same kids stealing 80, 90 cars.
Jack, so first of all, thank you for the phone call. Just let me say on the subject of recidivism, the senator talked about the JEDS program. I'd encourage any listener to go back and listen to our full program on JEDS, a juvenile diversion program that is aimed at intervening. And the data I have from Assemblymember Damond Meeks is that September to September last year to this year, 61% decline in car thefts in Rochester and a single-digit recidivism rate for people going through JEDS. Now, that's not every teenager who's accused of any crime. It's not... say it's perfect, but Senator, is there anything else you want to add to Jack, who's concerned about recidivism, public safety, before we get to taxes?
Absolutely. Jack, thanks for your question. I fully agree with you. We all see these changes. We're seeing it with the Walgreens decision to pull out of a lot of locations in the city of Rochester, which is devastating for a whole nother reason. We already had food deserts. Now we're going to have pharmacy deserts. That is dealt to retail theft. We've seen that change, especially since the pandemic, right? We saw this mental health crisis go into effect. I'm not making excuses for individuals. I'm just telling you that we have seen a change in Rochester when it comes to theft, whether we're talking about car theft or stealing from stores. Something I have made a point of, and I'll make it a point here again to say, is that we did change at the state level the laws for recidivism so that if you are a repeat offender, a judge in the state of New York has the ability to place you on bail depending on a number of circumstances. That was a change. And that's an example of how the original legislation that was passed before I got to the Senate did not address that. And we saw that challenge in our community, and then we went back and we fixed it. Based on direct response from you, Jack, as well as others across our community. And now we need our local judges to make sure that they're using the tools in their toolbox. And that's a whole different conversation. Another reason why it's so important that our Rochester electorate vote on local and state elections, including our judges, because these are the folks who are making decisions that have a direct outcome on our public safety. Let me just switch to the tax question, because I think that's a really good point. I would agree that we're seeing a number of taxes in New York State become driving of behavior. In fact, when I was looking at home ownership rates in the state, I was talking with a number of realtors in our community. I didn't know that New York State is the highest closing costs in the nation. When you're purchasing a house, has the highest real estate taxes in the nation, mortgage taxes, when you're looking at purchasing a house. These are barriers to home ownership, certainly in Monroe County, but really all across New York State. I will say, though, that we have listened and we have tried to make significant changes when it comes to our middle class community, and especially that's the majority of folks here in Monroe County, where we voted this year or this past legislative session on a middle class tax cut. And so this is actually the lowest tax rates in the state of New York in 70 years. And that's obviously pretty significant. You know, is it where we need to be in alignment with some of the other states that we see? No. But it's certainly a step in the right direction. And just make a note that the property taxes are decisions of local governments, right? So property taxes are done locally. Income taxes, sales taxes are done mostly at the state level.
On the subject of transportation, a generalization, fair or not, is that Democrats tend to be a lot more ambitious about what they'd like to change to diversify transportation. We're a very car-centric society, much more so than Europe, for example. And so Democrats are tend to be more interested in everything from high-speed rail to streetcars to a full menu of options. And the political right tends to say, okay, how are you going to pay for that? And, you know, they'll point to California. They'll point to places where high-speed rail has been tried, and then it stops because the budget's overrun. So you have ambitious ideas about transportation. Can they be paid for? What do you want to do? What do you want listeners to understand?
In the hyper-partisan world that we live in, Evan, where everyone is separated further and further away on different issues, I believe that transportation could actually bring us back together. Because whether you're a Democrat or Republican or East Side or West Side or suburban or urban, we care about how we get from point A to point B. And we're coming up on the holiday travel season, hard to believe already. When folks go to the Frederick Douglass International Airport, they say, gosh, I wish there was a direct flight to fill in the blank, right? Or you think about, I don't want to take the plane. I wish I was a train. I could get down to New York City faster, or I'm trying to go to Toronto or wherever your location may be. I wish didn't take 6 hours to get to New York City, right? These are things that we can do and look at. And by the way, other states are doing it thanks to the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act. And it's about having smart state legislators go after those resources on the federal side to be able to do this type of investment so it doesn't fall upon our taxpayers, right? You know, in terms of the federal dollars, right, we all contribute as Americans into our federal tax system. Let's get some of those dollars back to our own community. We started to do that when I was able to deliver $18 million this past year for a long-distance bus terminal. That's like the coaches that kind of come in from New York City. For a lot of people who are coming up from other parts of the state to go to RIT or to U of R, that's their front door to Rochester. And we were using a temporary station for the past 12 years. So we're going to integrate it within our Amtrak station downtown, which was the original vision of Louise Slaughter all those years ago. So we're going to complete the Congresswoman's dream of an intermodal station, but that's just the beginning. I want to see more direct flights out of our Frederick Douglass International Airport. I want to have a real conversation about connecting Toronto to New York City with high-speed rail. And in just a couple of weeks, I'm going to have the opportunity to go down to Florida and to take the Brightline Rail, which I've actually never taken before. It is a privately operated high-speed rail program that goes from Orlando, Central Florida, down to Miami. And I want to experience that, and I'm going to take a bunch of business owners as well. Because when we're talking about transportation, it's not just about convenience factor, it's about workforce growth. The number one thing I hear from our businesses, they have a workforce issue. They can't find the talent that they need to expand or grow. We have Micron in just the shadow over in Syracuse. They have thousands of jobs. And I'm not talking about minimum wage jobs. I'm talking about $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 starting salaries. How do our people get those jobs? How do we get them to those jobs? Transportation can really open up New York State. We've come a long way from the 1990s, where we used to talk about separating upstate from downstate. That's ridiculous. You know, that doesn't make any sense. We couldn't even afford to do that if we wanted to do that. But what we can do, and what the smarter legislator will do, is better connect upstate to downstate, so that you can work and live in upstate New York, send your kids to great schools, go to see a play at Jiva, but also work in Midtown Manhattan and get there easily. So transportation, I think, is the future for growth in New York State.
We're going to run out of time, but two quick follow-ups, and this needs its own conversation. But you have pointed out that Rochester's airport loses passengers because people will go to Buffalo to fly direct, and I've done it. So But how do you get more direct flights in Rochester?
So on average, the Frederick Douglass International Airport loses 80,000 people a year to other airports. So that could be Syracuse, that could be Buffalo, could even be Toronto,
yeah.
Pearson, right? Yep. Because of the direct flight option. But when we do that, it's all tracked, by the way. Everyone knows that, but the FAA. So the FAA, the Federal Aviation Authority, when the FAA sees that people are getting their flight access from other airports, they say, okay, well, Rochester doesn't need these direct flights because they found out there's a flight being offered in Buffalo.
Sure, so what
that
do we
works.
Do?
That works. We get people to start using the Frederick Douglass International Airport. Come back home. Stay here in Rochester. Fly out of Rochester because when you have more flights leaving, more airplanes filled, it sends and shows a demand need. And then you can go to the airlines, JetBlue or one of the other larger carriers, and you say, look, we have all these people flying. We have 80,000 more people flying out of Rochester per year. We need more direct flights to New York City. We need more flights to Florida, right? Wherever that may be. And that allows us that bargaining power with the airlines. But if we don't do that, we're going to kind of be stuck in this vicious cycle.
I got to get your colleague in the assembly in. So last quick question. Toronto to New York City and everywhere in between with high-speed rail, can you pay for it?
We absolutely can pay for it because there is money at the federal level to build out that infrastructure. And by the way, if you talk to the folks in Amtrak, they are filled to the gills with their passenger rail program. So there's a demand for tickets. Now, I'm not going to say that it's going to be the cheapest ride ever, but it's also not going to be priced out of the market either. They want to move a large number of
people. But the money comes from the feds? It's not necessarily a big state expenditure?
So there'll be a state match to it. But again, it's about prioritizing what are the resources and how are they spent at the state level. We need leaders in Albany who are going to fight for upstate New York. And I'm a hometown guy, and I'm going to make sure we get our fair share.
Keep coming back. We do appreciate all candidates who have been on this program. We'll come back to this program, win or lose. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
State Senator Jeremy Cooney, jeremycooney.com. His opponent, Jim Van Brederode, declined our invitation to be on this program.